Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Jules Gill, are you leaving what culture? Get back here, Jules Gill.
He's got the little comedy crook. He's just trying to like hook me back on. It's like, no. I've got
trying
more to
do
say.
His own thing.
Let's address the elefante in the room. Yes, officially, but also no. To better explain. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the UBP, the UBP, the UBP.
The
I am Jules Gill, and I'm joined by Scott Tailford, who is about to receive some devastating but also brilliant news.
Everything that me and him have just gone through, he's going to walk back now and go, no, I'm not doing anything for our culture anymore. Yeah. I'm leaving.
So on the 29th of May, 2023, it will be my last day as an official full-time member of the What Culture family because I have accepted a new position of a senior or a video games producer over on the Future Games show, which you should all definitely go and subscribe to. And Scott's allowing me to say this because they're part of Future. We're all part of Future. It's
yeah, we got bought by
fine.
Future.
Yeah, we were absorbed into the greater mass and yes. Now I'm going, bye! Like that.
So but yeah, but the sweetness for this is that you'll still be appearing on What Culture Gaming. We'll still be doing the UBP. Jules will still be around. It's just that it's very much worth doing a new adventure every now and then.
Exactly. It's a case of like, you know, I've been with you at What Culture since end of 2016, 2017, around that time. And, you know, we have been through it all. We've been through the ups and downs, the ups again, and some of the downs again, and then the ups again.
It is a bit
again.
Where it's flat,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, it's fine, it's fine.
Flying.
It's a case of, I feel like, I'm not trying to say that I've seen it all and done it all within What Culture, but there is kind of a slight limitation on where we can go. We've already succeeded, and I'm not trying to sound egotistical, but we've already hit like the million subscriber mark. We've already got shows that work. We've already got all the gears running. Everything is a finely tuned machine and it just works the way that it does. But I feel like I want to take that comfort and basically twist it a bit, try and start again, try and work with like a new team, develop new ideas, like forge new connections and just try new stuff. And I'm not saying that I didn't get the opportunity to do that within What Culture. I'm just saying that with this here, I will get the joy, the fear, the anticipation, the panic of starting a new channel and starting it all from the ground up again and really trying to just get them up to the same level that we're at. It's basically just like, what can I do to help them grow? And I just think that now's the time to do it. I don't want to spend another 5 years or so of my life doing something that I feel I'm a bit too comfortable in, if you know what I mean. I know where it's going.
Every now and then people have that urge to just try something new, and this will have... I mean, the thing is, we can do the vast majority of stuff at Wild Culture, but at some point, we're not... Yeah. We haven't got the Future Games show. We haven't got certain things that are just awesome potential ventures that you can get stuck into. So Wild Culture will still be alongside you, and you can still hop on the channel, and we're still going to do UBP and everything. And chances are we'll meet up in person a bit more anyway because we'll both be at
we'll
events.
We'll both
and
be at the same events, and that's the best thing. It will be just from I'll be wearing a different name badge. the best part is that it's going to force me out of my comfort zone because they want me to do like live hosting. They want me to do live streaming more. They want me to actually be out there in the public interviewing people. And I get a bit sort of like antsy about that because it's obviously public speaking and, you know, speaking to interviewers and developers. It's always a bit nerve-wracking.
You're going to walk up to people and ask who's heard of Soul Reaver.
You just think to yourself, what if I mess it up? But then
you'll be fine.
But this is the thing. I'm going to do it because I want to push myself creatively and just keep pushing forward with that. Constantly evolving is the idea that I've done with this move. So yeah, that is it. So it's goodbye, but also you'll be seeing me pretty much every single week anywhere on What Culture. So it's also hello to the people that are joining me over on the Future Game Show.
Yes, go check out the Future Game Show stuff, and we'll make it work. Anyway, speaking of the UBP, the UBP, with me being Scott Tilford and you being Jules Gill, did we say your name?
Oh, I did, mate.
Okay. people send in their various questions, their various talking points for the week, whether it be gaming, whether it be Tenacious D's new song.
What?
And we just get through as many as we can. So I carried over a few questions from last week because we had a massive submission from people, and I'll do the same into next week because we've still got loads. I just forgot and I put another tweet out.
The take trough overfloweth.
So we'll get through as many as we can. One from Toby Lerone, who says, "UB to the mother flipping P. Oof. Legends, do you feel that gaming has almost peaked graphically, 60 FPS issues aside, and that the gaps between console generations may begin to extend as, from a technological point of view, the next leap in gaming isn't as big as it has been in the past?"
You know what?
Have we beaten gaming?
I totally agree that when it comes to graphics, like, we are approaching like levels of fidelity that are bordering on like the uncanny valley. Mm. There's only so many places you can go. I mean, you've seen that unrecorded gameplay stuff that have come out, the body cam first person shooter game. Mm. Like, that is so realistic that it's uncomfortable for many. Mm. And I feel like, apart from going into that photorealism stuff, where else can you take it? Like, mm-hmm. We've already seen so many amazing styles artistically from different games that have chosen not to go down that route. So I feel like graphics, we're kind of done, which I know that many graphics card companies around the world are just completely sweating. I mean, all they're really doing, if we're being honest at this point, is saying, let's just add more stuff in.
Well, for
let's give 3D ray tracing to the ants in Skyrim. It's like there's nothing, you're not really doing anything to move the needle. You're just going, yeah, okay.
I just feel like there's this weird like relationship with fidelity. It's like everything needs to be hyper detailed, even though you'll never, maybe in a photo mode, you might zoom in if your character crouches, you might see the detail on a leaf or something, but you don't need it. And I feel like, I mean, today is, I mean, Happy Zelda Day to all those who celebrate, because Tears of the Kingdom is finally out. And that game is a massive endorsement of, you don't need this hyper fidelity. You just need a believable world that you can get lost in. Like, you know, that's
art,
no less
immersive than
better
than graphics, isn't it?
Yeah, I would also always say so. And like, some of our favorite games have really strong art styles, whether it's like Jet Set Radio or like, Akami. I don't know, whatever. Okami. And it's like, they absolutely work. And Tears of the Kingdom has a couple of frame rate hitches when you go into a certain village or something, but you can skydive from the top of that map to the bottom all in one go, and it looks beautiful. And you can see for miles as well.
When, like, you consider what that hardware it's running on as well, like how old the Switch is. Like, I'm not trying to bag on it. I'm just saying it is an old piece of kit.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's running that game that well is actually really impressive.
Yeah, man. Well, it's like 6 years old now, and I think the processor is like a Tegra mobile. It's what would be in like a mobile phone. Yeah. Like, it's that kind of thing. So, yeah, I wonder where we go from here. For me, I'm hoping it's just doubling back onto gameplay systems, because I feel like we've proven we can do lifelike animation. We've proven we can do, you know, mouths moving in time with the words. I don't care anymore. I want the games. Like, can we just make some games?
I do agree, but I also don't.
I know Josh likes all the fancy stuff.
Because I can't remember what video came out the other day, but it was like the most impressive thing about this game in Dead Island 2 is a hug. Because of the way that the characters actually interacted with each other, and cloth and mesh textures actually flowed properly. And I feel like if you can get that level of animation down as being the next step forward, like, doesn't matter how you wrap the present, as it were, it's just how it is delivered. And I feel like the mo-capping, the way that textures interact with each other in maps, like, I don't want to see another cloth scarf go through my body anymore. Right. I don't want that in this day and age. If they can nail that as being the next step forward, then yeah, I would say that is an advancement in graphics, or the way that at least physics of the game interact with each other.
Well, it's like, I mean, I remember, you know, Splinter Cell Pandora Tomorrow. I remember when that was being shown off, and their whole thing was that Sam could get a hold of a curtain and slide down it. And we all marveled at the material physics. Yeah. That was in 2004.
Yeah.
And it's like, unless you're making material physics a really fundamental part of the game, like you're a fashion designer and you need to like add some flair or something, then I'm not that bothered. Like, for the most part, I don't take each individual element in of like, oh my God, look at the rendering on that. Look at the rendering on that.
Yeah.
I just take the world in. And so, yeah, hence why I think the likes of Zelda or whatever are like the way to go.
It's so funny when I see fan-made HD up-res mods come out, because there was one that came out for Red Dead Redemption 2, which apparently is meant to add like the most granular detail onto every aspect of that game. And when you're looking at it in an image, it's beautiful. It is undeniably one of the best looking things I've seen in a long time. However, in reality, our eyes don't work like that. It's really weird to look at something and see every single object in such fine detail, no matter the distance that it is from the player.
Yeah, like, as if sharpness is turned on. Well,
it's interesting because what it does is that actually doesn't give depth to the image. It flattens it. Because if you're seeing every single thing at the same graphical fidelity, like, no matter the distance, it's kind of like confusing to your brain. You're just like, I'm looking at an image rather than that. So it actually, in theory, breaks your immersion of the game than it would do if it had, air quotes, worse graphics.
I also think that for me, this is completely subjective, personal. I really don't care about someone just spending thousands of hours rendering the world itself.
Like
Red Dead 2 is very impressive, but if I want to see a bunch of trees, I'll go and see a bunch of trees. I want to know what you come up with, what planets you've designed, what ecosystems you've come up with, what creatures and everything else. Not that you can't do that. And obviously, like I said, it is impressive. I do appreciate that. But it's just at some point, I don't know, I want you to see what you can do with the medium itself. You have access to, you know, ones and zeros to make anything.
Yeah, that's why I'm excited about what's going to happen with Starfall.
Starfield,
that's it. Yeah, I don't know. I was thinking of Redfall.
The one that Bethesda's doing.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm excited about it, because it's like they're using this procedural world generation, which is, you know, in theory, bad, because that's not going to create very complex or intricate level designs. But the fact is that it's going to be on this new graphics engine. Everyone's been touting up as like the best looking Bethesda game that's ever existed. And it's a case of, if graphics work to create this otherworldly, in a very literal sense, feel to the game, then yeah, that is an achievement. But if it doesn't have good art direction, then we are going to be looking at just another game that just looks pretty but is completely soulless.
That's the whole thing with Starfield at the minute, is like the No Man's Sky approach, which I do think No Man's Sky has a very identifiable art style. It's very like the old Isaac Asimov 70s sci-fi books. But like, yeah, Starfield, I guess we'll just see how that comes together. I forget how many planets they said they had.
Oh, so 100 billion trillion or something like that. Isn't it? Just a completely astronomical level of...
It was something insane for No Man's Sky. I'm sure for Starfield, it was still like 8,000 or something.
Still incredible, like, that, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's like, how the hell do they make that feel cohesive? Like, if it's just, if you've told an AI to generate it, then either we'll see the stint, we'll see it connect, or it'll be different.
Were you kind of put off when they said it was like 8,000 or so planets? It was just like, man, I'm not going to go to 8,000 planets. Like, even in Skyrim, I am looking for the quickest way to get from point A to point B. I am a fast travel demon.
Oh, if
they basically go, I'll explore for like the first 30 or so worlds. But when I look at the little tick box that just says, you have 7,900, and like, I'm like, oh no, mate, no.
Did you see the new Tears of the Kingdom advert, the TV advert with the guy on the bus? Have you seen that?
The guy on the bus? No.
There's an advert doing the rounds where they literally make a demographic out of the middle-aged person who is bored with their job or bored with their life. And so the trailer for the new Legend of Zelda game is like a sort of late 30s, maybe early 40s looking dude, or whatever age he is, a middle-aged dude, and he's on the bus, and it looks like he's in dreary old England. He's looking out the window of the bus, and the weather's all a bit naff, and it's all a bit grey, and it's all a bit crap. And he gets home, and his wife strokes his arm, and he's really depressed and everything. And he looks on the table, and there's a copy of Zelda there. And he picks it up, and he starts playing, and he remembers how to smile again. Oh, and then the next day, when he's on the bus, he's got the Switch, and he's playing it, and he looks out the window, and it's a blue sky. It saved him. It's reminded him of the value of life.
Oh, my God. Like,
I'm not going to lie, I felt a bit seen in that. Right, I saw it, was like, yeah, all
right,
yeah.
I'm just saying, right, there is a marketing group out there that thinks that that gives the impression that their game really does make your life a little bit better, just because it brings you a bit of happiness and it allows you to see that. What that message is actually coming across as, from the way that you've described it, is you need video games to make your life bearable, because your real life is so utterly depressing. Like, no, thank you. Why don't we actually say instead, hey, no, the problem here isn't that I need this video game to feel better. It's that this situation that has got my life into this place in the first place is not okay.
Yeah, it is very...
And what if I can't afford Tears of the Kingdom? Am I going to be depressed for the rest of my life? Like, what's this?
No, the weather won't change then. It'll be a permanent grey sky. You'll never see light again.
Have they even been to Britain, by the way? There is no way in hell that we are getting a blue sky. We are overcast 95% of the time.
I'm only assuming Britain. I don't think he says anything in the video. But
if it's a bit sort
it feels of like it.
Yeah, if it's a bit overcast, it's us.
Yeah, it feels like a dreary sort of like random afternoon or evening when you're going home. But yeah, it's very much video games as a coping mechanism, which, like I said, I feel seen that video games have genuinely revitalized parts of my life on certain, you know, areas of my life.
But you shouldn't be telling people that you need to get Tears of the Kingdom, otherwise your mental health will be in the toilet. It's like, come on, man, that's a bit emotionally manipulative, isn't
it's
it?
It's got to bust out the increased price point of £70.
Oh, yeah, that's how they get you. Yeah. They just go like, it's like, Tears of the Kingdom, it'll make you feel better, mate. £75.
£70 now.
Or the deluxe edition, that'll make you feel really happy.
Do you want to smile again? Yeah. Pay the money. So we'll get through some more questions.
Sure.
I was determined to get through more than, I think we did two last week. We ended up blabbing for like half an hour.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
That's kind of what we do. But still, we'll get through some more. Question from Jack Asbury, who says, at the time of seeing the tweets that we put out for the questions, he's on a stag weekend. What's the best stag party / weekend that you've ever been on?
That is crazy. I can tell you about the stag weekend in which the stag got hit by a tram. Would you like to hear
Please
that?
Please do.
Okay, yeah. So we were in Prague and we were having a good old time, as good old pranked. Boys do. And it was basically, we were just drinking a lot, being loutish, being silly. And then we were just like, okay, well, we've drunk a lot of beer. We've shot some guns. Mm-hmm. We've gone on a little boat ride. We had a great old time, sort of like just chilling around the place. Let's get some more beers, take them back to the hotel that we were staying at, which actually, no, it was like a big Airbnb with one massive room that had 8 beds in. It was really weird. It's kind of like old Victorian orphanage style, but kind of cool at the same time, because it had like a big circular sofa in the middle where you could just go and chill, which was actually really nice. Mm-hmm. So we were like, let's go back there and have some drinks, get ready, and then we'll hit the town proper. So we started walking back, and Rob the stag is basically just not looking where he's going. He looks the wrong way up the street, because obviously they drive on the different side of the street over there. So he looks at where he thinks the oncoming traffic is coming. Unfortunately, the thing that hits him is a bloody tram, a massive electric tram. So you know how big those things are. Uh-huh. And he gets smashed to the floor. He breaks all of... Oh, yeah. He was carrying a huge bag full of all the beers and like liquor that we bought. Oh, no. So the thing that broke his fall and turns out is the thing that actually saved him from a serious head injury or a concussion or even worse was the fact that he landed on a bag full of glass. The glass broke his fall and he stood up immediately afterwards, like completely in shock, just like, I think I'm okay. So we're like, wait a minute, you just got hit by a tram, you nearly cracked your head, and all of this glass is now around you that could have lacerated you by landing on it, because he wasn't wearing much. Like, I think it was just like a thin sort of like shell suit style coat. And, the tram driver gets out and he's just like, obviously he's having a panic attack because he's just hit somebody. Mm-hmm. And after a bit of like muddled translation between the pair of them, he's like apologizing, and Rob's apologizing for getting in the way of the tram effectively.
I walked into your tram, sir.
And again, it turns out that the only reason that Rob wasn't dragged under was because of just the right angle that he got clipped by. It didn't push him underneath the tram. It was used the bumper. The bumper lifted him and pushed him up out of the way onto the glass.
And so that's like when people get hit and they like lose their shoes. Like they sort of like get flung.
So it was utterly mad. We're just standing there watching this going, oh my God. But much more expletives involved in there. It was just like, what is going on? Because all of us are pretty tanked at this point. Everyone's just kind of trying to process. It's like, did that actually just happen? Like, what is going on? And the best part of it, the little like caveat to the story, is that the police then showed up to obviously investigate what had gone on, and the only outcome of it was that the tram driver got into no trouble because Rob was like, it's absolutely fine. Rob, however, I believe got a fine for being drunk and disorderly nearly €200, I want to say, but it turns out that was a fake fine and they were basically just making a bit of skrilla off the side because the cops are just like, you are drunk, you are idiots, you are not from here, we're gonna take some money off of you, mate.
What the hell? That's like a hell of a weird, like, I don't know, dark cherry to the top of the cake of that thing. I don't know. The thing is with them stag dudes, I've only like got my own one to talk about because I'm the only one of my like close friends who's got married. And my best friend got married, but it was in Peru. So like, I don't really have like crazy stag stuff. We all dressed up as me for my stag weekend.
So funny. We must have told the people at home.
I think
about
we have done.
Like where Scott was just like, oh, you all look very nice. And it's like, we're dressed as you. That's why.
It's because I didn't realize, like, was it Ewan or something? Ewan had like drawn a beard on. Yeah, people had drawn beards on. But I was all like, oh, you all got like dressed up for it. But so yeah, I don't have much of a more in detail one for that. Next question from Tom Hardman, who says, what older Star Wars game deserves a remake? I booted up Star Wars Bounty Hunter recently, which was not as awesome as I remembered, but it always had potential. I will say that they should make a new 120 frames a second pod racing game. Just do that.
Let me sideswipe Star Wars Episode 1 Pod Racer.
I still think holds up pretty well. I don't know if we've talked about that on this podcast. Wait, no,
you've got that copy on the PS4.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra.
and UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I've got it on PS4 and on Switch. I really like that game.
Yeah, but doesn't it run like a HD version? Like it's actually
it's like touched up, but it's still the original one. Like thing is, I always thought that they should do a better job of letting you sideswipe the other races. Definitely. I know you're actually killing them, and I guess Disney doesn't want that for, you know, the kids' game. But if you
how can they not be okay with killing people when they show how many people in the Mandalorian episodes? It's like bang, 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 bang. You're all dead.
True, and I guess in the actual episode one race, that dude Sebulba is whacking everybody.
Yeah. So,
give me, because you can taunt in it. So yeah. I'm like, you've got your taunt button, you've got the speed. Just put a little bit of burnout in it and let me sideswipe dudes, put the physics model in there.
Just
like,
as a little side thing here, Sebulba's pod racer was so cool, man.
They released
like a Lego version of it, and it was the most I wanted that so badly, but I got the the Anakin Skywalker one instead. But I wish that I'd got the Sebulba one, because those massive turbine engines and that noise they make with that, it's such a cool sound.
The thing is, they never, as far as I know, they've never brought pod racing back. It's only ever been in episode one. I don't know, and I'm just like, either it's in the galaxy as a talking point, or it's just on Tatooine. But we've been to Tatooine enough times.
I know.
Like, why is it not a thing? And so, I would, if you're going to do, I know they've announced Star Wars Episode 10 or whatever they're doing. There's a whole thing where Rey's coming back, and I'm so checked out of Star Wars. But either way,
but if they've got pod racing back in,
I'm telling you, if they do a pod racing movie where it's
You and I have discussed in the past. I remember this. It was like we were talking about how we would have made Star Wars prequels better, and then I think that you and I broke off from the group chat and were like, do you know what? The pod racing segment should just be its own movie, like a rags to riches story of like a group that is down on their luck and they just need to win this big Tatooine race event, and that's it. Have it totally unconnected to the main Star Wars plot. Maybe even have it just so that like they did it, and at the very end of the race, they see Anakin, who's like the next boy wonder, and they go, "Oh, look!" And then therefore, if you want to tie it in, that's how
you need to. But like, there's a whole culture. Well, in theory, there's a whole culture around pod racing and specking the pods. You could do a whole Fast and the Furious style, the original Fast and the Furious style movie set in a pod racing. Why are they not doing that? And then do the tie-in game, like online.
I was talking to Ewan about it, and apparently there's like some deep cut lore about some of the races. Like one of them is like from a family that's been exiled by their own race. There's another one where it's like he's running from a bounty hunter and he's just trying to scrape by. Or like he like betrays somebody else in the pod racing community and is like blacklisted. I was like, there is great goss here. There's hot tea to sip.
But you can have a whole thing where you're talking to the characters in between the races, you have rivalries, SSX tricky style. Like, I'm just saying, it writes itself, and it would also, the blueprint's already there.
It would definitely scratch the itch of the F-Zero game that we're never getting again.
Because we don't, there's no Wipeout, there's no F-Zero, there's that one that's on Switch that I forget the name of that I do love, it came out back at launch, but there's very few anti-grav races, like, especially that have the budget behind them.
There's actually one coming out soon. I can't remember what it is it's called, but I'll check out on that, because it's like meant to be the spiritual successor to Wipeout, another one that's coming out, and it's pretty cool. But in terms of what Star Wars game I'd like to see remastered or remade, I had such a blast with Star Wars Battlefront 2, the original version of that, because that was when they added in like the there was more hero combat, they added in a campaign as well that was properly thought out, had online multiplayer as well, which is still active, believe it or not. If you go to the PC version of it, there are still private servers and communities that are still playing on that, and it actually holds up surprisingly well given all that it is. So I think that there is great potential to go back and say, look, hey, our version, EA's version of Star Wars Battlefront didn't work that well. Let's maybe like retool it a little bit and just give you the classic experience. I would definitely play that.
The cancelled stuff for Battlefront 3, where it was like you could go in and out of the ships themselves in like real time. You don't have to warp it out of them. I like the idea of having a gunfight with another player and you both jump in X-Wings or one in X-Wing, one TIE fighter, and you take to the skies. Yeah. And like that's the thing they could do with bringing in to try and maximize it.
Wasn't that game like 90% complete before they pulled the plug? Because I know that you can actually play the alpha or whatever version of it is out there. There's like a fan project to bring it to life.
Right, yeah, there were like lots of gameplay clips for it. It was that Pandemic studio, like literally called Pandemic, who did Full Spectrum Warrior and stuff, and Mercenaries, and then they just shut down.
They did some amazing games. Do you remember they did Lord of the Rings Conquest, which was basically just the same Battlefront game, but in the Lord of the Rings universe?
Oh, yeah,
they did that, and like it wasn't like amazing, but it was still really cool. I wish that they had just taken that idea of like, let's take an IP and put our formula onto it, because that's what Dynasty Warriors did with Persona 5 Strikers and Gundam Warriors and Hyrule Warriors and stuff like that. They've just taken that formula and applied that to that.
Imagine the whole Battlefront genre.
Yeah, imagine how many IPs that could have that could work with. Imagine a Transformers game with something like that going.
I would take I don't know if you watch Demon Slayer, but I would take a Demon Slayer version.
I need to watch it because you do need to watch Demon Slayer. Everyone's been banging on about it, man, and I am very keen for it. Because I've been going through at the moment, I've finished off that 911 Fire Emergency one, and I've just started a series called Mushin Muscle. It is the best thing. Did you like what's it called? One Punch Man.
Oh, dude, I love One Punch. Yeah. One
and
Punch
do you like
awesome.
Mob Psycho 100? Because that's the same.
I've not seen that yet.
Oh, you should watch that as well. Okay. Basically, this is the same character archetype of a guy who's pretty stupid, but he's incredibly powerful and completely not aware of what's going on around him. He's basically Saitama, but there's the twist. he lives in a world where it's Harry Potter, so he goes to wizarding school, right? But he can't use magic because all he's done instead is he's just been lifting weights. So he bests everyone who uses magic.
Just punches him in the face.
But they look down at him like, oh, you can't use magic, you're rubbish. He's like, I'll show you.
That's a bit like, have you seen My Hero Academia?
Oh, yes. I love that. Love it, man.
I'm waiting for that to like kick in because I've seen about four episodes of it. Well, I'm just like,
Four episodes.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it to like be something. I don't know. I'm kind of waiting for a bit of pace. I'm just sort of like, yes.
About to go through some serious arcage, my friend, because going to go through the whole All Might arc with his sort of like rise and fall. Then you're going to go into the greatest villains that they've ever sort of introduced. And then when it gets to the later season, which I've just sort of been catching up on now, you are going to be like, well, there's pulling the trigger on moving character arcs or ending them forward, and there is this. And they are the Grim Reaper Scythe, my friend.
Oh, no. Well, see, that's the thing is when I was in Japan, I saw so many pieces of artwork, and then in the corner it was a My Hero Academia logo, and I was like, oh, that character looks so cool. That assumedly villain looks so cool. And I just want to get to the point where we're all active and doing stuff. So I want to do that. But yeah, Demon Slayer, massive shout out to that franchise. Season 3 is on right now. It's week to week. That thing just goes strength to strength. Like, I cannot recommend Demon Slayer enough.
What culture anime when?
I don't know. Anime culture writes itself. I would have a t-shirt that says that.
Do you know I actually know why we haven't done the what culture anime thing. It's because even though gamers and wrestling fans are a very particular bunch, when it comes to anime fans, they are so fastidious that it's a crime to get any positive detail wrong. And because of the way that anime characters are written, most of them are so overpowered that any sort of like, oh, this person would beat this person, they're just like, no, that's not true because of this spout. Like, and because it's constantly evolving every single story, even by the time you put out a video, it's a case of like, oh, so say like, Goku hates spaghetti. Like, then it would be like a case of like, oh, but it recently, last week, they just had Goku entering a spaghetti eating contest and he said, me love spaghetti.
It's one of those things where like I did an anime list like years ago and I hadn't seen half the ones that were in there, so I did my best trying to pronounce everything, got it all wrong, and then obviously the top comment was just like, who the hell's this guy? And I was just like, I know like most of this but not all of it.
I know, it's like, please be kind, please be nice.
Please let me do it. Next question from PG Quips, who says, UBP, hope you're all doing well. Name one annoying game mechanic you like and one you don't. I'm partial to weapon and armor degradation myself, but I could do without being encumbered every 10 minutes.
Now, this is the thing. Commander Stephanie Sterling put out a little message, a tweet the other day saying, name me a game that was improved by weapon degradation.
Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom.
No, improved by...
Yeah, I mean, the whole... I'm totally with PG Quips. I love the whole degradation thing in those games because they force you to have to use every weapon. You can't just rely on one thing. Even the Master Sword runs out of energy.
That's weird, though, isn't it? It's like...
It is weird in the canon,
this amazing weapon that's literally meant to be the best of the best. Ah, it's run out of juice. Plug it in, USB. Do you have a charger for it?
It's so... they don't even pretend to handle it well either. It just flacks a thing on the screen. I'm talking about Breath of the Wild, although it's the same in Tears of the Kingdom. Just says, this has run out of energy and you have to wait like 10 minutes. For it to come back.
Okay, so you would say that you'd like the old weapon degradation.
I'm fine with that because in those games, and especially in Tears of the Kingdom, you can warp anything to anything. So if you've defeated an enemy and their horns fell off or part of them or any part of any rock, anything you find, you can fuse that together. So you're making all of these weird hilts with a diamond top or a dragon's fang or something.
Okay.
Weapon on the fly. So I like that. But then you only really get it for like 10 hits. It breaks and you make something else.
That's quite cool though. But you're constantly evolving the formula, just going what works, what doesn't. I've heard that the UI, by the way, is absolute hot dog. Garbage.
In which,
just got to be like going through that little like menu of just being like click, 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 going cycling through left to right. Like, they need radial menus.
It's weird because it's like if you hold L, you've got your like main set of powers, which let you craft and glue stuff together. Yeah. But on each D-pad, if you hold it down, you have all your inventory. So it's like a sword inventory, a shield inventory, and an item inventory. And within them, you're still in the game, by the way. You're just holding the D-pad down. You can then push Y to cycle 3 or 4 different sorting options for like recently used, most power, whatever. I very much got used to it, but it is very cumbersome if if you're just going to be like, oh my God, how do I just make a cool sword?
That's fair enough.
Yeah, there's a lot of jumping around with that stuff.
Now, in terms of like an annoying mechanic that I would actually like to see more of, I'm a real sick freak when it comes to to card games within video games. Like Caravan from Fallout New Vegas or the Triple Triad from Final Fantasy VIII or Gwent, for example.
Dude, the cards in the Shovel Knight King of Cards expansion. One of the best little mini games.
So I like the idea that they're there, but it's so infuriating to lose at those games. Like there is nothing worse than just being like, oh, I think that I've mastered this. Oh, I've just drawn a bad hand. I'm going to lose. Like, because I know that in Final Fantasy VIII in particular, you would go and play people and you would carry the rules from that area through with you to the new area like a sort of virus-style disease. And the worst one would be random, where you can't pick your hand. You were just dealt a random selection of cards from your deck.
Right.
And that meant that you'd have sometimes amazingly powerful hands that would help you win immediately. Or you would have the worst cards in your deck and one of the cards that you really like, and your opponent, when they win, obviously selects to keep one of your cards.
Oh, yeah, in Triple Triad all the time.
So they'd be like, oh, I'm just going to nick your best card. And it's like, I actually needed that card, you asshole. Like, what are you doing?
Because if you then beat them, does it maintain the inventory where you can get it back?
Here's the best part about it, Scott, is that if you've got the random thing, sometimes, you remember, you can only get a card from their hand. So that means that the random rule might mean that they don't have your card for another 3 games, and then they'll suddenly have it, and then you'd be like, oh, brilliant, there it is. And I lose that hand again. Brilliant. Okay, you've taken another one. Fantastic.
Yeah, stuff like that. That was the thing in Triple Triad. I was like, when I started putting time into it, and that was always the gold standard for me for a long time. But yeah, then they would just sneak in and steal your 10-8 card that you spent ages trying to get.
But I loved it in a way, because it's something that was so much effort and depth put into it that I was just like, yeah, cool. I would actually like to see this in more video games. I wish that more developers would be brave enough to try and create a card game and just... because the whole reason that Gwent is so successful is because it was struck that beautiful balance between being a really fun distraction and being just a genuinely great game. Like, it's simple to pick up, difficult to master, and it only gets better the more time that you put into it. And it's so much so that it's become its own thing. And I feel
I love that you can buy the physical sets.
Yeah, and I feel like if developers were really putting their mind to it, they'd be like, well, we are creating games. We can create mini games that are as addictive as this, and then we can offshoot them into other stuff.
No, and I'm a big fan. I always wanted to buy that Shovel Knight set. Like, I have both Gwent sets from the DLC. A final question from Willie Araya, who says, have we seen the new Little Music video for Tenacious D's new song, Video Games?
No.
Oh my God, okay, this will be the sign-off treat from the end of this podcast.
Okay.
Yeah, new Tenacious D song called Video Games. It's only like a minute and a half long, like their original self-titled album used to be. And the animation that's in it is just really awesome. It's just Jack Black and Kyle Gass singing about video games. Name-dropping specific ones, which is feels weird in a song where he's like, I'm playing a bit of Fallout 4 and I'll do this and I'm playing Red Dead and it's just like the best thing about it is the animation. I do think the chorus is like catchy enough. It's very old school Tenacious D in terms of like the song length and everything.
I love that Jack Black is having a resurgence of sorts because of the fact that he's obviously been Bowser, like everyone's got him on that, and that Peach's music video was just so funny.
Have you seen the movie yet?
I have seen the movie. I thought it was really, really fun. Like, I love that those people they're like, oh, it didn't move the cultural, the discussion cultural forward on video games. Dude, it was a great, like, 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10 maybe video game movie, and that makes it a great one. Wow, this music video is violent, my friend. I'm just looking at it now. I've just seen somebody's head get blown off. I'm watching it with the subtitles
on. Claymation kind of way. The Mario thing, I'll never forgive Illumination for putting Take On Me and those other random pop songs over the music that was actually orchestrated for it, because on the soundtrack they have those songs that were then replaced in the movie. I'm hoping that when they do the home release they do like the proper actual scored version, because if you hated those scenes when you were watching them in the cinema, the music is there. It's just only on the soundtrack.
The medley that whenever they came back to do those actual proper old school Mario musical bits were amazing. At the end credits, when it went through the full medley of all of the songs
and Galaxy
together,
and everything.
I just sat there with Beanie and I was just like, that's probably my favorite part of the movie. And like, I enjoyed so much of it, but I just loved that beautifully curated piece of music exists.
The amount of movies that are being made that are already have cinematic foundations, they're already quite cinematic in the first place, Last of Us or whatever, I'm always going to get way more out of something that wasn't that cinematic in the first place. Like, trying to cinematicize, as a word, Mario is so fascinating. Like, there's something way more watchable about that and like more enjoyable about it. But anyway, massive thank you to everybody for sending in their various questions. This has been the Untitled Banter Podcast, the UBP, the UBP.
The UBP.
The UBP. I've been Scott Tilford. That's been Jules Gill.
Indeed, I have. And remember that next week we will be back asking for your questions. Or will we? Because we already have an overflowing trough. So don't get
too
crazy.
Oh, you were making a good point. I was thinking you were doing a thing where you were like, will I be here? Will
no,
I be gone?
No.
I don't know.
I'm still contractually obliged to be here.
I'll be throwing money at him. I'll go and find him in person. The UBP will always continue. But yes, we have plenty of questions to carry over from last week and this week. But still, we'll catch you then. For now, thank you very much, rather, for listening. And we'll catch you then.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.